From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. In the wake of last week's tragic shooting deaths of five law enforcement officers in Dallas and two high-profile shooting deaths of African-American men in Louisiana and Minnesota, we'll get reaction from Florida's law enforcement community, including a legislative effort to add law enforcement officers and firefighters to the state's hate crime law. We'll also explore local community police relations, the Black Lives Matter movement, and racial tensions in Southwest Florida. Plus, as the number of cases of the Zika virus in Florida quickly approaches 300, we explored Zika research efforts, including a Florida mathematician's analysis estimating the impact of mosquito-borne versus sexually transmitted cases of the virus. We'll also learn about the New England Complex Systems Institute's response plan for Zika-impacted communities. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. As the number of cases of the Zika virus in Florida rapidly approaches 300, we'll explore Zika research efforts, including a University of Miami mathematician's modeling analysis estimating the impact of mosquito-borne versus sexually transmitted cases of the virus. We'll learn about the New England Complex Systems Institute's response plan for Zika-impacted communities and how exposure to an insecticide used in Brazil could also be contributing to cases of microcephaly in newborns. That's coming up later this hour. But first, the U.S. experienced two high-profile shooting deaths of African-American men by police last week, Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Philando Castile in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Following those deaths, a lone gunman in Dallas, Texas, killed five law enforcement officers and injured nine others Thursday night at a Black Lives Matter protest that had otherwise been peaceful. It was the deadliest day for U.S. law enforcement since the September 11th attacks. At a memorial in Dallas Tuesday, President Obama acknowledged that prejudice exists in our institutions, including law enforcement agencies, but also insisted that, quote, "We're not as divided as we seem. I know how far we've come against impossible odds," end quote. In the wake of these shootings today, we get reaction from law enforcement and explore local community police relations, the Black Lives Matter movement, and racial tensions in Southwest Florida. Joining me now is Executive Director of the Florida Police Benevolent Association, Matt Puckett. The association advocates on behalf of police officers throughout the state. Welcome to the program.
Hey, John. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. We also have Captain Mike Castorella with the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Thanks so much for your time today as well.
Hi, John. Thank you.
And we're also looking to speak with James Muwak Hill, president of the Lee County chapter of the NAACP. Hopefully he is on his way and will be joining us soon, but we'll go ahead and get started. I also invite listeners to join the conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Matt Puckett, I wanted to start with you. First of all, what was your initial reaction to news out of Dallas last week that, you know, five law enforcement officers had been killed and nine others wounded? When did you find out? What were you initially thinking?
Oh, I was just like everybody else. I was in shock, and my heart and prayer went out to the families and the officers and the Dallas community, and especially the police department there. I know what a hard job they do and what a good job they do. I've actually had the privilege over my career to meet with representatives of that agency many times, and I know they're top-notch and a class act. So, and I think with everybody else, I wanted more details as to what was going on. I think the initial report I received was that there were multiple shooters. It ended up being just one. So I just wanted to get more information and hope that there wasn't any more than what had initially been reported that had been killed.
Captain Casarello, what about you? Similar reaction?
Yeah, a very similar reaction. I think one initially of shock. It was obviously an unprecedented attack on law enforcement, something we haven't seen anymore in with so many officers being injured and or killed. But again, hoping that we can bring some something positive out of this great tragedy and maybe wake up some people in America and come to an agreement, come to a realization that it's just got to stop.
I'm glad you said that because I don't mean to suggest that there's a silver lining to any of this, but do you think that what occurred in Dallas could be prompting people to consider law enforcement in a different way or perhaps a more empathic way than they had in the past?
Well, I think I speak for every law enforcement officer in the nation that once we get over the initial, and it's normal, I think, for everybody to feel a certain amount of hatred, a certain amount of anger toward the individual who perpetrated the act, not any one specific group, but toward that individual and what that individual represents, that there can be a silver lining, that it can result in increased communication, in a realization that there is an issue, an underlying issue, and that everybody can come to some common ground and that we don't have another incident like this unnecessarily.
And Matt Puckett, have you been concerned about potential copycats going after police in other parts of the country, possibly here in Florida? Had that crossed your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a concern. It's kind of a constant concern. You know, you have these incidents where, you know, the rhetoric gets really high and heated, and there become calls, quite honestly, on both sides. There become calls for acts of violence, and you're always concerned that those things are going to happen. And you know, unfortunately, we have seen, maybe not on the same level, but we have seen some more assaults and some more gun violence towards officers. We have the incident in Michigan. I don't know what prompted all of that, but, you know, it's a concern of ours, and it's a constant concern of ours.
All right. And you know, regarding that rhetoric you just mentioned, I wanted to play a clip from President Obama's address yesterday at the memorial service in Dallas addressing that very issue. Let's go ahead and hear that now.
We know that the overwhelming majority of police officers do an incredibly hard and dangerous job fairly and professionally. They are deserving of our respect and not our scorn. And when anyone, no matter how good their intentions may be, paints all police as biased or bigoted, we undermine those officers we depend on for our safety. And as for those who use rhetoric suggesting harm to police, even if they don't act on it themselves, well, they not only make the jobs of police officers even more dangerous, but they do a disservice to the very cause of justice that they claim to promote.
And I don't know if either of you had a chance to listen to that as it was happening live yesterday, but just a reaction to the president's address there. From analysis I've been seeing, people seem, I guess, impressed, for lack of a better word, that he was sort of able to of course, continue talking about the issues that the Black Lives Matter movement is bringing forward, but also respecting police.
Yeah, I did. I did get a chance to watch it in its entirety as he was saying it, and I was impressed with how he was able to weave together the context of, you know, not only what happened in Dallas and Baton Rouge and in Minnesota, but also, you know, what's been happening in our country. And I think he did a good job. He touched on a lot of points that needed to be touched on. And I hope people take that to heart and begin to have that dialogue that he's asking us to have, and understand that this isn't simplistic. We're not going to solve this problem with some program or, you know, one special event. It's going to take a lot of frank discussion, and it's going to take some investment by a lot of folks to get it right.
And Captain Cassarella, I was hoping you could maybe just tell us a bit from your own experience, you know, just about what officers go through when they don a police uniform and the dangers you could potentially face on any given day that you go to work that maybe folks haven't considered.
Yeah, there are certainly vast disparities between jurisdictions and the types of communities that officers are asked to maintain order in and patrol and keep up community relations in. Some more police-friendly than others. But regardless of where you work, as a police officer, there's always that thought in the back of your mind that when you leave for work in the morning or in the evening, that you may not be coming home. That's, you know, it's something that we don't talk about a lot. It's not a pleasant thought to have, but it's there. And recent events seem to bring that thought out into the forefront. We have various individuals on social media calling for violence against police, and naturally that puts folks on edge. Not only the police, but our citizens who are law-abiding citizens who don't want to be involved in any of that violent behavior. But when you put cops on edge like that, it's hard to keep perspective when you're worried about always having to watch your back. When you're worried about somebody sneaking up on you, it's hard to keep your eye on the mission. And certainly, we need to take steps to put an end to it.
In the wake of last week's police shooting deaths of black men in Louisiana and Minnesota and the sniper attack on law enforcement in Dallas that killed five officers, we're getting reaction and exploring community police relations. We're talking with Matt Puckett with the Florida Police Benevolent Association and also Captain Mike Casarella with the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, and hoping James Muakil with the Lee County chapter of the NAACP will be joining us a bit later in the program as well. Listeners can connect with our guests and join the conversation by calling 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Connect on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Matt, Republican State Representatives Dennis Baxley of Ocala and Neil Combe of Auburndale have proposed expanding Florida's hate crimes law to include law enforcement officers and firefighters. I imagine this is something you'd support.
It is. We had been looking at that. You know, Louisiana passed that legislation this past legislative session, and it was something that our association was looking at. It seems like it's been accelerated now to some degree. But, you know, I think there is certainly a need for it. You know, we've had, in where I'm from in Leon County, we had a deputy killed, and the person, the assailant, lit his house on fire and called the first responders to the house with the express purpose of, you know, committing mass casualty on the first responders. Unfortunately, he did kill one, he wounded another, and it was a horrific event, and it was a hatred for police officers, deputies, first responders that was driving that. And we saw the same thing in Dallas. You know, this was an attack on law enforcement officers. So there's certainly the threat is real. And adding this, I don't know what it will do to stop people that are determined to harm law enforcement or first responders. I don't know if any law in the book could do that. But, you know, if it helps, if it allows someone who's got this in their heart to maybe think twice, or perhaps if they commit an act to put them away longer, then we are going to support it.
Well, that kind of leads into my next question. I mean, do you see this as something that could be an effective deterrent, or would this kind of be more about just having harsher punishments for those who do target law enforcement or firefighters?
Well, you know, I don't know if it could be a deterrent, and I'm not bothered if it's a harsher punishment for someone who wants to harm law enforcement and other first responders. I think that they should be punished severely. I think there are certain areas where we could maybe look at how we're punishing people and maybe make changes, but harming people, especially law enforcement and first responders, those that are, you know, they're calling, but their job is to go into dangerous situations, and this is only making this worse when you have targeting. I think that's a heinous crime to commit, and we should throw the book at those folks.
As I'm sure you know, similar proposals have been filed in state legislative sessions past, but haven't gained traction. Do you feel confident that, you know, this year, given what we experienced last week, that this will, I guess, be more popular with lawmakers?
No, I'm never confident of anything passing a legislative session. Dynamics change so quickly.
Right.
But, you know, I think that it's nice to have this discussion. It will be nice to explore it, and maybe there's a silver lining in filing this legislation, but no, I'm never confident when it comes to how things will go through a legislative session. There's too many variables.
Right. Well, and I did ask you both about your reactions to the shooting of police officers last week, but I'm wondering if you also happen to see the videos that have been circulating on the internet of the shootings in Minnesota and in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and perhaps get your reaction to those.
Well, sure,
absolutely, John.
Okay, go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry, Matt. Absolutely, and I just want to caution everybody, it's difficult to make a determination one way or another concerning the guilt or innocence of a police officer or a citizen, for that matter, based on a 5 or 10 second clip of a video shot from a cell phone or what have you. It is very commonplace in our society these days for the general public to take on the role of judge, jury, and executioner based on what they're seeing in the media, what they're seeing on TV, and only having part of the story. I'm not saying that our criminal justice system is perfect at all, but what I am saying is give it a chance to work. If there is fault on one party or another, that is typically the job of the court system to determine. They do a pretty good job of it. It's the only system we have, so we've got to live with it. And what I would ask is, let's give those government bodies the opportunity to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Especially police officers nowadays who have really been called out, give those groups the opportunity to thoroughly investigate it and hold the guilty parties accountable.
And, the Washington Post won a Pulitzer for its coverage last year of fatal shootings by U.S. police and finds that while the numbers are up slightly for the first half of this year, overall the number of police shootings has stayed relatively constant from year to year. Do you think that gives people do you think people are getting a perception that things are getting worse now with, dashboard cameras and police body cameras as ubiquitous as they are, and the fact that, virtually everybody is walking around with a video recorder in their pocket that they can post directly to the web? Are we simply finding out more than we did in the past?
I would imagine that's part of it. But, I want to just say something. There were 60 officers killed so far from January 1st to today. So that's just too many. One is too many. And I know from others in the community, one, unarmed black man or, civilian, that's too many also. And I think we try to get into this conversation about statistics, but really this is at its core, we're talking about death, which is an emotional argument. And it's emotional for people in Florida when they hear that officers in Michigan were targeted and killed in a courtroom. So even if those were the only two officers that were killed this year, we would say that's too many, and we would be upset and concerned about that. And I think I'm not saying that the facts and figures are diluting the argument. I mean, certainly we have to use that to put things in some context, and I do believe that cameras are playing a role. I mean, a use of force, and certainly I'll let the captain talk about that, but I've never seen a use of force that looks good on camera, not once. And I imagine he hasn't either. I mean, it's by its very definition, it's a use of force, it's violent, and those things are being captured, and they're being posted on social media. And as the captain said, there is a, you know, someone behind a computer screen basically, you know, determining someone's guilt or innocence based on, you know, 15 seconds of footage, and they don't understand the context, and they don't see everything. I mean, I'm a football fan, and I watch instant replay, and if, you know, my favorite team's star player didn't step out of bounds because I said he didn't step out of bounds, there's really nothing you could ever show me, no matter what the footage proves, that it's going to make me change my mind. And you got a lot of people that are coming into that, into this context, which is life or death, with that same mentality. And we really need to let people look at the context, look at all the evidence, and make an accurate determination of what happened. And that's why officers are asking, and that's why you hear police officials consistently ask, let's wait until the investigation is complete.
Well, can I also ask you to react to, you know, because I know that there are folks out there who've seen these videos, and I think, as you eloquently put it, no use of force incident ever looks good on camera.
Right.
But then, you know, folks who are members of these minority communities, there is this perception that the whole kind of criminal justice system is stacked against them as well. And they don't have any confidence that these investigations are going to yield results or you know, hold someone accountable if they did do something wrong. I mean, can you, you know, maybe speak to some of the I guess frustration there that folks feel if they don't trust the system?
Well, I can certainly see it, and I think, unfortunately, in the United States of America, we have a history that backs up a lot of those grievances. The first thing that I would say is, when we have an incident like this, no one, not the law enforcement officer or anyone, wants to see a loss of life. They just don't. I don't believe any law enforcement officer wakes up in the morning with the intention to go out and kill somebody. But, as the captain said, that same officer wants to go home at the end of the night, and he is making or she is making decisions based on the threat, based on the context of the situation, and is trying to determine what amount of force is being used. I think the problem that we're actually having is not speaking to the root cause, and the root cause is that officers are going into areas. By and large, these are poor areas, and there are drugs, there's alcohol, there's crime, and there's violence in those areas, and then law enforcement officers are being sent in there, And they're being told to be the parent, be the teacher. I think the president said this, be the social worker, be the mental health advisor, and do it all in a neat and clean way. And it's just really difficult. I think law enforcement officers have a tremendous burden that's being placed on them. So really, I think a lot of this discussion should be placed on what are we doing to try to solve some of the structural problems that we have in some of our neighborhoods that aren't allowing people to seek gainful employment or education or other things, so that we don't have, like we had in Baton Rouge, where we have a person who's selling CDs in front of a convenience store. That's a cash transaction in a neighborhood that's probably, I'm sure he was a target to have that much cash on him, so I'm sure he had a gun on him. I mean, that's why they were called there. What are we doing to stop that from going forward? And that's really the discussion we need to be having. I think the use of force is a symptom of that problem.
Well, I thought something that you said kind of touched on another point as well when you talked about law enforcement officers being sent into these communities. Mm-hmm. I guess, do you think law enforcement, their perception would be better in those communities, or things would somehow improve one way or another if the law enforcement officers were from those communities, if folks felt like they were being, you know, policed or represented by people who also have a stake in that same community? They don't go home to some other community.
Well, John, I think it's extremely important to, whether or not the officer is from those communities, you know, and the catchphrase has been community policing.
Yes.
you know, we use it ourselves. It's incumbent upon the officers. It's incumbent upon the executive command of every agency to ensure that the officers patrolling a certain area are familiar with the socioeconomic status of those areas, to not just ride around for 8 or 12 hours around the neighborhood responding to calls without getting out and speaking with people and developing relationships and things of that nature. I'm not saying that's not happening in these particular jurisdictions, but I can surely speak on a local level that here in Charlotte County, if you look at our Facebook page, we haven't had a threat to law enforcement. We haven't had anybody threaten our families like they have in other jurisdictions. I think the expansive effort toward community involvement, community relations and partnerships goes a long way, and that needs to be a national narrative. It's more difficult in some jurisdictions than others, but I think that needs to happen.
All right. Let's take a call from Joanne in Naples. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Joanne Camaro, and I live in Naples, Florida. And I just want to offer my family as hope. We're a big four-generational family. I'm a 73-year-old white old lady, and I have a black adopted son. And in my family, we've adopted from Cambodia, the Middle East, Bosnia, Japan, China, I can't even remember. And I really feel if we could just see the humanity. I mean, my second cousin, his first day as a policeman was 9/11, and that was his beat. And he risked his life carrying bodies out, and we didn't know where he was for 2 weeks. So I see both sides. I just really want us all to come together.
Joanne, is he okay now?
My cousin? Oh, yeah. This 9/11 was his first day, so now he's a father and he has 2 children. So he's doing really well. But I see all sides of it. I mean, I'm not black, but my son is. And he's been pulled over, and we had to talk, and it probably wasn't a good enough talk. But I see what the police do, and I think they do too much. I mean, I see them handling mentally ill people. I mean, to me, it's a really tough situation, but I really would just love us all to come together and work at it.
All right. Well, Joanne, thank you so much for your call and truly an interesting perspective you bring to this whole complicated conversation. And it really jumps right into another clip from President Obama's address at the memorial in Dallas yesterday. And let's go ahead and hear that now.
Everyone was helping each other, one witness said. It wasn't about black or white. Everyone was picking each other up and moving them away. See, that's the America I know. The police helped Shetamia Taylor as she was shot, trying to shield her 4 sons. She said she wanted her boys to join her to protest the incidents of black men being killed. She also said to the Dallas PD, "Thank you for being heroes." And today, her 12-year-old son wants to be a cop when he grows up. That's the America I know.
And Matt Puckett, could you respond to that part of President Obama's speech? I think he touched on something important there, which, you know, the point he's making seems to be, you know, you can be both pro-black, pro-Black Lives Matter, but that doesn't mean that you're anti-police. You can be pro-police also.
Right. They're not mutually exclusive positions to have by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that was such a compelling story, real life, happened at that event, a story for him to share, and I'm glad he did. And I hope her son does become a police officer. I think that's, well, I don't want to say anything's getting lost in this debate. I think you actually just touched on it. It is incredibly complicated. The context from an incident, it goes all the way down to what was happening at that point where the incident occurred, to the street level, to the community, to the city, to the state, to the nation, and sometimes to the world. You know, the incident that happened in Orlando, where that had a world context to it, and we're all wrapped up in it, and we're all trying to, in some ways, make sense of things that are happening. It's happening so rapidly, and I'm glad the president spoke so eloquently on all of those topics, and I'm glad he shared that story. I think it probably touched a lot of people, and I hope it did. I hope it did.
All right. Well, we are about out of time for this portion of the program, so we'll leave the conversation there. But thank you so much to my guests. We've been speaking with Matt Puckett, Executive Director of the Florida Police Benevolent Association. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
We've also been speaking with Captain Mike Cassarella with the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Thanks for your time also, Captain.
Thank you for having me.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, as the number of confirmed cases of the Zika virus grows by the day here in Florida, we'll explore some interesting new research about the virus, the threat of mosquito-borne versus sexually transmitted Zika cases, and how affected communities can better prepare to combat spread of the virus. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.